The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Off Stage and On the Air, performance number 719. I am Lisa Schiff. I am joined by my stalwart and smarty co-host, Ms. Nicole Shiro.
Hello.
You are listening.
To begin, forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up, feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh yeah.
Come, studio sales. I'm home.
It is Wednesday, May 9th. May 10th. May 10th, 2023. On the show today, we have Austin Playhouse and their show Indecent. And then later we'll be talking to Katie Folger and her show Getting in Bed with the Pizza Man. And of course, we're going to have crazy talk of the world of theater in Austin, New York, Chicago, Boston, and Schenectady. Why not? We'll be back. Consider yourself one of us.
I was waiting for when they announced this a couple of weeks ago when you were going to play it. I just need to say, more porridge, please.
Yeah, well, yeah, I want some more.
I don't know why it's coming back, but good for the people that like it.
So when you say it, what are you talking about?
Oliver.
Oliver, yes. So I'm going to just...
Mean little Fagin.
Yeah, mean little Fagin. So that is why we play that, because Oliver is coming, and we're going to talk about it in just a second. But first of all, I would like to thank Kim Simpson and another wonderful International Folk Bazaar.
Kim rocks.
Kim rocks. And if truth were to be known, if I were to be honest about everything, Kim Simpson's not there. That was a virtual Kim Simpson.
I was like, it was a virtual Kim Simpson. But you know what? Kim still rocks.
That was it. Kim does rock. I do love his show. But Kim is away, and I was hitting play for him.
I know. He was very excited to ask you to come on in and engineer and do the thing for him.
So we are also fortunate enough. Oh, and I totally, because I didn't read it. I was going by memory. I didn't even mention that we have a future KOOP programmer here. Ann Davis. Hey, Ann, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for letting me sit in today.
Well, I'm so happy to have you here. So tell me, I mean, you're in our here at Co-op, learning to be a programmer, learning all this state-of-the-art equipment so that you can do your own show here.
Yes.
What kind of show do you want to do?
I'm actually going to be joining a collective to start, so I'm going to be joining The Lonesome Stranger on Thursdays. Just kind of, you know, going to see where that takes me.
Oh, cool. So that's an awesome thing, and we are glad to have you. So what fun things can you tell our audience about yourself? And you're not going to like this. How much theater do you watch?
Oh, I was a little worried about this question. I mean, the show came highly recommended, so I heard I would come on here and learn a ton, but I know basically nothing about theater.
Oh,
I saw
okay.
Cats in the 80s, if that
counts. Oh, well,
that is a show.
That absolutely counts. It is
That's
indeed
about
a show.
It.
But, you know, we don't like to talk about it. But I have memories of it.
Okay. Hmm?
Anybody?
Oh, no, I was there.
Anybody
mind.
With me on that one?
Yes.
Okay. Well, cool. We're happy to have you here.
Thank you so
chime
much.
On in if you feel like it, even if it's like, oh, I don't understand that. I want to hear about that. Let's introduce the folks that are here with us, shall we?
We shall.
Because I couldn't introduce you if she said no.
Exactly.
Okay.
I was about to say, I didn't know I was the gatekeeper on that one.
So we have the incomparable Ben Wolf. Hi, Ben.
Hello.
Welcome
how
back.
Are you? Thank you. Thank you.
The equally incomparable Kathleen Fletcher.
Oh, hello.
Welcome.
Thank you.
AJ Kloss, who I don't know very well, but I'm assuming equally incomparable.
Thank you.
Correct.
Is it possible to have three incomparable people, because then you can't compare anything?
I just want to say, maybe we have six in this room that are incomparable.
Are we going supernova here?
We are. That's all possible. Six of us here.
You know what?
So we're all the world's best X.
Yeah. It's because we're off stage and on the air.
Ooh. Yeah. So let's just talk about Oliver, because we had a couple of openings. One of them was indeed what you just said, Oliver, and I played a little piece of it. And I have to admit, when I was a young person, we did a consider yourself as a little acting exercise for school.
I feel like at some point we've all been tortured having to sing that song.
Yeah, but you know what? I didn't know anything about Oliver, didn't know it was from Oliver. I just thought it was some crazy song. Yeah, I was a bad young theater kid.
No, well, I find that movie painful. I did back then. I still do now.
I don't. Well, you know that I love me some Dickens.
Yes,
and this
yes,
is based
yes.
on Chuck's. I call him Chuck.
I know.
Close friends.
Oliver Twist, which I learned by reading this review in the New York Times by Jesse Green. I've never read Oliver Twist, but it's got a whole different ending.
Oh, it's totally. I was like, it's totally different.
Yeah, maybe totally
that's
different.
Maybe that's my problem.
Maybe
I don't
that's
know
what it is. But this is Lionel Bart, who wrote the music and the book, and it's
isn't that a fun name?
The music,
Lionel Bart.
The music is amazing for it, and that seems to be a lot of the problems.
Yeah, there's some good music in it.
There's a lot of good music. Okay, I think
I know
we've got
it's
that.
Like nails on a chalkboard to me, so it's hard not to be like,
Yep. So this is directed by Lionel. Oh,
another Lionel?
No, hold on. I may be wrong. Lear de Bessonnet.
De Bessonnet.
Still a good name.
Who is
it's
the
a fabulous name.
Who is the artistic director of Encores. So this is an Encores production. I'm pretty sure, I got to check the dates, but I think it's probably already closed because they usually only play a week or two at the tops. And they have a very abbreviated.
I thought there might be one or two more shows. But you're right, but it's closing.
It's an abbreviated show. It's an abbreviated rehearsal period, which is one of the things that Jesse Green may have said why it doesn't seem all that cohesive, because they didn't get to spend a lot of time together. Mm. But Fagin is your boyfriend, Raul Sparza.
I do love me some Raul.
And Nancy is played by Lily Cooper. Mm. Oliver is played by Benjamin Pysak. I don't know that person.
But I think Raul, never mind, ahead. Keep going. I was going to say, I think Raul still has the same effect, like Hugh Jackman couldn't make Oklahoma good for me. I don't think Raul would, but I think that's a great role
so
for him.
I wasn't sure. Are you not a fan of Oliver?
I didn't get that. Can you believe that?
Yeah, from your earlier statements.
I think that's a great role for him, though. And actually, that's a great role for Lily, too.
So I also didn't realize, it mainly because I didn't read Oliver Twist, that the Fagin character is it's all about, and this will be key into what you guys are here to talk about, it's all about anti-Semitism. Fagin, which is typically, even in Oliver, they've got the exaggerated long nose of the caricature of a Jewish man of the day. And he was in the book constantly referred to as the Jew. Mm-hmm. And he's the bad guy. So I went, wow, did not know that. This play had choreography, but it looks nice and colorful. I mean, when you see, you know, all the orphans doing their
consider
yourself and all the other
and
stuff
they need
that
to
they
consider
do
themselves.
It's not a hard.
So I will
life,
say
though.
This: normally it's always so dark and browns and earthy tones, and I was like, well, this is quite colorful. Mm.
And yet the concept for the direction is to take it more in a realm of like a Sweeney Todd, really sort of keen on the dark moments, because you know, I've never really thought of Oliver as a dark musical.
Oh, it is dark.
Oh, excuse me, as long as he needs me?
Yeah.
Well, no, right. It there is, are three songs is. That do that, but the other ones are like, when your little city and young,
I don't know. I've always thought it was really dark, but yeah.
Right. Well, anyway, so they tried to even darken it more, but they also had children from New York City schools come, 20 extras that come in and play.
That's fantastic.
I love that.
Yeah. So that was good. So here, oh God, I don't have my phone handy, so I'm not going to be able to.
I can get it for you.
No, I've got, so we
you
haven't
need
done
go-go
this.
Gadget arms today.
I do. We haven't done this in a while, but remember when I used to, like, I find the erudite nature of critics
and
the words they choose to put in reviews
who's
makes
the offender
me so angry.
And what's the word?
Well, the offender is Jesse Green.
Oh, he likes to do that.
And this word is amanuensis.
Oh, rolls right off the tongue.
Yeah.
Yes, right.
And it's talking about the songs being hummable. And it says it's probably because his composition method was built on humming them to an enema numensis. Does anybody want to, like, guess what that is?
A fancy word.
Maybe it's because I'm like onomatopoeia. It sounds like
it
what
does
it
sound
is.
Like onomatopoeia. I thought of that myself. I was like, well,
no, it's like a secretary.
Oh,
of
so he hums to somebody,
and they're able to take it down,
and then they take it down. But then, okay, so that one was bad enough. And now I'm going to try to, while I talk, type this into here because there is no way that I can pronounce this word. But I remember when I looked it up before, yep, it comes right up after I type the first four letters.
Yes.
It's a German word, and it sounds like this.
Gesamtkunstwerk.
Gesamtkunstwerk. Okay, and so here's the sentence. But perhaps we do not need Oliver to be a Gesamtkunstwerk. I will say this. Clearly, it's a German word. The last part of the word is werk, W-E-R-K, so work. So what do you think, Oliver being a Gesamtkunstwerk be?
Well, gesund is health.
I was going to say that too, because the Gesundheit. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't think that. I think that you might be listening to my pronunciation.
Oh.
It means a total work of art. It's like an art, a piece of art that encompasses everything.
Yes.
Wow. Why don't they just say that?
I mean, leave it to the Germans for one word that's a whole sentence.
Yeah, it's
interesting.
Crazy.
My favorite German word is Lebenskünstler, which means life artist.
My favorite word in German is Gesellschaft.
Ooh, what's that mean?
I don't know. It's what you say after somebody sneezes.
No, that's Gesundheit.
Yeah, but there's also Gesellschaft. Oh. According to me and my friend Marion.
Okay.
So I also like Schadenfreude, which I know so well because of a great musical.
Yes. Yeah, but that's a great word too.
Yep. So anyway, that's basically it. I'm not going to encourage people to go see it because you're probably not going to
unless you're there right now.
Unless you're there right
probably
now.
Probably not happening.
I am going to see if it has dates in here, and it doesn't. But here, through May 14th. So
I thought it was one more weekend.
There is enough time to get a plane ticket, go up to New York, and go see it.
Or if you had already been planning a trip, or if you're in the area, or in the tri-state area of New York, you can get on a train. There's many options.
All right, so we have like 10 things to talk about, and we have less than 4 minutes to do it. But we did have another opening, which I think is interesting. We talked about the sign in Sidney Brustein's window.
Yes.
And it opened the day before Tony's cutoff was.
Uh-huh.
But what I found interesting is they asked the critics not to review it for a week. And I'm curious as to why the critics said okay to that. I don't know. I mean, if a show is open, if you're opening the show, they did one preview in the open, and they did just come off of a production in BAM, and they closed that, like a month or two ago, not even all that long ago, and they came right in to do this. This is a Lorraine.
Probably because media is so short-staffed and tight that with the Tonys happening and having to turn in all that coverage they're covering, they were all like, yeah, no problem.
It's
a strange world we live in, Lisa. Yep. Strange things happen.
But the reviews were okay, not great. They didn't come on to the did they like it site, which I found.
I looked that up to see, and I didn't see anything.
It's not
it wasn't
there.
Me.
But we've talked about the show before. This is Lorraine Hansberry. Mm-hmm. This is her very last play that she wrote. She was very ill during the previews and the performance, and she died during the run of like very close to the beginning of the run. Mm-hmm. Most of the people saying that most of the problems with this might have been fixed had she been alive and healthy to make those fixes during
the changes. Yeah.
And even after we had talked about it before, and I read this review again. I still don't know exactly what it's about, but it's about it's about this guy, Sidney Brustein, who buys a periodical without really knowing a lot about this
about
subject
what they
matter.
Do. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's Oscar Isaac and Rachel Brosnahan.
Oh.
Yeah, exactly.
It's really fascinating, yet like I still can't figure out what I read or what it is or...
It looks like a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. It got middling reviews, I'd say.
I see. Yeah.
And it says part of the... And this piece is Laura Collins Hughes wrote this for the New York Times. She said, and despite some sluggish moments, it does not feel overlong at 2 hours and 40 minutes. Trimmed from 3 hours at BAM, Brooklyn Academy of Music. The script's unevenness does make you wonder, though, how Hansberry might have reworked it had she had the energy and the privilege of time, and to what degree she, a black woman and a closeted lesbian in the very white, very male, ostensibly straight world of mid-century American theater, felt pressure to conform to her playmaking. Hmm. So it would have been interesting to see if she would have been able to, fix it. But it seems pretty good. And the woman that plays Iris, who is the Rachel Brosnahan's, got the best notice in this review. Miriam Silverman. Hmm. I thought I had made a little underline,
hats
but I can't
off
find
to
it.
You, Marian.
Yeah, Miriam. Yeah. So other, I'm just going to jump right into the other reviews. The Chicago Tribune, Chris Jones said, a knockout, not to be missed, revival. The Daily Beast, Tim Tiemann, the most notable improvement of the show now on Broadway is the design overseen by Dots. And Dots is evidently this design group that has, this is, I believe, their first Broadway
That's
thing.
Pretty cool.
And I think it's interesting that some of these shows are using groups, as opposed to a person.
Yeah.
The production company of the play itself is also a group, Seaview.
Yeah.
Yes. Yep. That's why it's been like, it's like this... new thing.
Variety.
Naveen Kumar said, exquisitely directed by Ann Kaufman, its first production in over a half a century demonstrates both the play's stunning modernity and its viability as invigorating popular entertainment.
Interesting.
Voila. So that's that video. And so there's a couple of things that I want to just, well, two things. I'll just say this. That are going streaming and available to see. Peter Pan Goes Wrong. All the Goes Wrong thing is going to be on Broadway HD.
I know. Isn't that cool?
Yeah. So that's
good. I do love me some Broadway HD. There are some good stuff on there.
And Bad Cinderella live streamed
yesterday. I can't
figure
this one out.
I know. It's kind of weird. The opening number of Act 2.
Act 2.
Live streamed.
I don't know. I guess it feels like they're just throwing pasta at the wall to see if it sticks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's cool. It's neat to see Broadway doing something like that, honestly. But I'm still confused.
But it's just the one number? That's all they're...
Just the one number, first number of
and
the
it
opening
happened already. It
of
was
the
yesterday.
Second act. And it was yesterday.
Yeah. So I thought that was interesting. Here, let's just talk about this. I don't even have an article that I'm going to go for, but I just want to...
Look at you, just...
I'm just
going to
go for it.
Off the cuff.
How do we feel about the writer's strike? It doesn't directly affect Broadway, but it will.
Yes, I was meant to talk about this last week. And
what do y'all think about the writer's strike? Anybody have any thoughts?
I hope it goes better than the last writer's strike.
I was going to say the last one, right?
Let me tell you something. I was crestfallen from the last writer's strike because I was watching The Riches on TV.
Oh, yes.
Which is amazing, and it... got Eddie shut down because of the strike and never came back.
Yeah.
And it was
an
amazing piece. And the writer's strike killed that. Mm-hmm. But actually, I was talking about one of the podcasts I listened to was talking about the Tonys, which are happening in June. So the writer's strike is more, they're saying this is going to go on for a while. So the writers will be on strike at the Tony Awards. Mm-hmm. And those are the writers that write that award.
Awards.
So what are the Tonys going to be this year?
Well, I mean, what have they been lately? What have they been lately?
Well, but no, even in when these when people get up, presenters get up to introduce those, that paragraph is written by somebody.
I know.
So what, are they just going to have them come up and extemporaneously speak? Or are they going to...
No, I think the people in the Tony office or work at the Broadway League are working 10 times harder and writing some scripts.
Well,
I'm just saying.
But I would say a good number of the people that would be recipients or nominees of awards are union members themselves that may opt to not...
I was going
to
say.
To honor the strike of the Writers Guild by not saying words not written by a scab, if you for want of a better word. I don't know.
Hopefully it's like we see just how much writers are everywhere and are important, and I'm very pro everyone getting paid more.
Yep. It's interesting. I mean, it's clearly more complex than that.
Totally.
Because there are, I'm sure, two sides to this story.
A lot of it, this has to do now with because of streaming. So it's this whole unknown of television broadcasting versus digital online content versus streaming content. So it's a very similar scenario like with Napster and music and all that. And it was the Wild West of how do we deal with
one
this?
One of the things that they were saying was, you know, back prior to Netflix, and it was the Kevin Spacey vehicle was the first
House
one.
Of Cards.
Yeah. House of Cards. But prior to that, seasons were, and I'm rewatching The West Wing right now, and the seasons are 23 episodes versus streaming 8.
Yeah.
Yes. And some of the arguments the writers saying, and this is the argument I don't really buy, they say there's less work out there. But there's so much more content than there was before.
Correct.
So I don't know.
First, the chicken or the egg?
I support unions. I support what's going on. What was that look
oh,
about?
Oh, sorry. There's a joke with an egg smoking a cigarette and turns to the chicken and goes, I guess that answered that question. So I'm sorry. That's what that look was.
We will leave it right there. We're going to take a little break and come back and talk to the folks from Indecent. But I believe the one musical, the nominated musicals that you didn't do last week was Kimberly Akimbo.
I played Kimberly Akimbo.
Well, we're going to hear it again then. I hope you didn't play Make-A-Wish.
I did not play Make-A-Wish.
I thought that, because I know there's one that you missed, and I thought that was the one.
No, I played every single one. There were six, and I had to play seven songs, I added Willie Nelson's Summertime, Gershwin.
I favor Kimberly Akimbo.
Yes. I really enjoy that album. It was hard to pick one.
Let's listen to Make-A-Wish.
All right. First wish.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air. I'm Lisa. She's Nicole. We also have Anne here. Anne, what do you think so far?
Fascinating.
A woman of a word. Thank you so much. Nicole just showed me the script where it was, and Kimberly Kimbo wasn't there, but I skimmed the script very quickly, so I can't be... I cannot be held accountable for anything I do.
Yes, I played them all. I was fair with them all.
Well, let's introduce the folks from Austin Playhouse.
Yes.
We have lots of the cast from the show, Indecent, one of those members is Ben Wolf, but you also, and I don't know what your title, I can't remember your title at Austin Playhouse.
I'm the Associate Artistic Director.
Associate, the AAD.
Yes.
Then we also have Kathleen Fletcher. Hi, Kathleen.
Hello.
And AJ Klaus.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Indecent is just, first of all, I mean, people that know this show and listen to this show know my love of this show. It's such an amazing piece. Timely, as it turns out. So in a lot of ways, kind of a good thing that you had the pandemic to shift. But can one of you just tell the audience what is Indecent? What's the show about?
Indecent is the story of the troupe that puts on Sholem Ashes, the god of vengeance. The god of vengeance was significant because it was widely considered to be a masterpiece of Yiddish drama. And then it toured Europe successfully. It features a kiss between two women. And when it made its English language Broadway transfer, that kiss was a little too much for certain audiences, and the entire entire cast and production team were arrested for indecency. So this production of Indecent, the play Indecent, covers its initial inception from 1906 to its closing in 1923, and then the events afterwards as well.
Which is pretty amazing. The piece played all over Europe and Eastern Europe. It played downtown New York for years.
To like
raves. And it wasn't until it went to Broadway, and the script changed somewhat as well when it moved to Broadway, which people want to do. Yeah. But an amazing piece. And we talk about this was done on Broadway with Rebecca Teichman, who directed it. Oh my God. I just
Paula Vogel.
Yeah. Thank you. And Paula Vogel, they put this thing together. And when I saw that production, I was just so amazed and so pleased when Austin Playhouse said that they were going to do it. How has this... Well, first of all, let's go through... Ben, you're the only one that really plays one character.
That is correct.
Throughout.
I play Lemuel. He's the narrator for the audience. And then also when we get into the play within the play, he's the stage manager for the God of Vengeance.
And I have to say, that character, the name Lemuel and that character, are just they fit together.
Yeah, like
a hand
smile.
In a glove.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, thank you.
And Kathleen?
So I get to play, depending on how you count it, like 6 or 7 different characters, including one of the women who shared the first lesbian kiss on Broadway.
Two of the women that shared the lesbian kiss on Broadway, didn't you?
There's like another actress who plays the other one, but like I get to play many incarnations of actors who then play that character, which is like, depending on how you count it, that there's like 3 different actors who play the same character. Yeah. So differentiating those.
Right. Yeah. So we should say, and I think you might have made it clear, but I wasn't really listening to you.
I got you, Ben.
It tells this. He did. He mentioned
the play within the play. Yes. So, okay, good. Yes. Yeah, he did good.
Yeah. So it's pretty fun because Ben plays one character, but the rest of us play several characters, and everything is so beautifully choreographed and intricate. And you get to see these transitions being made live, but it's really seamless and it feels stunning to be part of it.
It's beautiful. AJ, who do you play?
I play Shalamash, the playwright, as well as Eugene O'Neill, another playwright.
Another playwright.
And a few other small parts.
Eugene O'Neill, I used to say Eugene O'Neill was my favorite playwright.
Has that changed?
Yeah, somewhat. But I still have a fondness for Eugene and his depressing writing.
Absolutely. Yes. He's depressing. He is, but I get it. But this is a play with music, right?
Yes.
And might actually be my favorite character is the music. It's all original music that was written for Indecent. We have an amazing
One notable exception. Mm-hmm. Yes. By Mir Bistuchin.
Yes. We have an amazing 3-piece band that play violin, clarinet, accordion, and then mandolin gets thrown in there. Mm-hmm. It's beautiful. It's haunting and lovely.
Does clarinet show up?
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah.
How do you take the klezmer out?
It is considered a play with music. And what I love to explain to folks, a lot of people don't get the difference between a musical and a play with music. And the idea of a musical is that the music carries the action and the theme across. And a lot of times we say, the reason why these people break into song is if you can't say it in words, you have to sing it. And then, of course, if you can't sing it, you have to dance it. And a play with music has music as part of the play. Mm-hmm. But there's so much music in here. Oh, and it's so beautiful. I can see why people would call it a musical. Mm.
We have 6 musical numbers. And this conversation is one that I've had with a lot of folks. So I'm like, it's just this shy of being a musical. Yep. But it's a lot of fun.
So, I mean, it's kind of, I know so many people that are very snobbish about either or. I only go see musicals, or more often you hear people, I refuse to go see musicals. And this is the kind of thing that can appeal to both.
I was about to say, this is a nice bridging of both worlds.
It is, really.
Yeah.
I love a play with music because, the music is so intentional when it's a play with music that I'm like, that's going to be a beautiful moment for them to do that and go all in. Yeah. It's so complex.
And one of the things I love about this piece, and I just wish I was part of the original production that had this happen, but somebody tell me about how y'all use language, how language is done in this piece.
Yeah, so in the script, a series of about 50 to 55 projections that are behind us at all times, and it tells you what language the actors are speaking in. So when we hear people speak in their native tongues, we're getting just how I'm speaking right now, the ease and the poetry of how we use language. And when they try to use English or learn new languages, we start to see that break down the psychic distance that comes between them and the ability to communicate with each other.
Yeah, it's an amazing conceit that this piece does, and it happens fast. I mean, rapid fire. I mean, as a performer, that's got to be kind of tough.
It took a lot of practice.
Yeah,
lots of notes from our dialect coach, mm-hmm. Amanda Cooley Davis. Some of us have spent 3 years thinking about it, but you know, we were in it for rehearsals for 4 weeks almost, and every night we were getting some dialect notes on how to clean it up and how to make it a little clearer, and you know, our focus was always on making sure that the story was told, so that if the dialect were got in the way, well, then we would start to pull it back a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. Now we're gonna hear y'all have a little scene. Yes,
we do.
Does somebody want to set that up for us?
Sure, I'll set it up. It's kind of a perfect scene to share because it's really the first full scene we get in the show Indecent. Mm-hmm. Mm. And it introduces the audience to the script, to Sholem Asht, the dynamic with his wife, which is the part I'm playing, so I'm mentioning it. But it gets everybody kind of eager and excited in a sense of where this piece can go and why it is so relevant and powerful for its time.
And what language is it in?
So it would have been in Yiddish, but because it is in Yiddish, and as AJ so beautifully articulated and expressed, it's going to be with the dialects that we have right now.
Great.
In English.
So this is Kathleen Fletcher and AJ Klaus doing a scene from Austin Playhouse production of Indecent.
Oh.
Oh?
Oh.
Oh, as in it's awful. Oh, as in how do I tell him? Oh, as in whom did I marry?
Oh. Oh.
Are you crying?
I can't breathe. Oh, as in it's wonderful. It's so sad. I love it.
Really?
Really.
What did you love?
My God, Sholem, it's all in there. The roots of all evil, the money, the subjugation of women, the false piety, the terrifying violence of the father. And then, oh, Sholem, the two girls in the rain scene. My God, there's poetry in it. What is it about your writing that makes me hold my breath? You make me feel the desire between these two women is the purest, most chaste, most spiritual.
It is. Maja, are you angry that I stole your words for the virgin daughter?
If Papa had come downstairs and discovered his little Maja in flagrante...
I would never have made it to the chuppah alive.
It's interesting hearing your words the night you seduced me in the mouth of a prostitute.
I feel like a prostitute every time I have to pander to Mr. Peretz to get a reading in his salon.
This play will cause a sensation tomorrow night. All the writers will be green with envy.
Don't bring down the evil eye. Puh, puh, puh. Mr. Peretz could hate it.
Oh, Mr. Peretz is a lovely man, but he's so 19th century. Ugh. Warsaw is a provincial little town. This play will be done all over the world. Moscow, Berlin, Paris. Wait. I know who would be perfect for the father. Hmm. Rudolf Schildkraut.
Who?
Rudolf Schildkraut is a sensation right now in Berlin with his Merchant of Venice. I'll ask Papa for money to send you. We must get this play to him.
It's my first play.
Our play will catch fire in Berlin. All the German intelligentsia can talk about right now is Dr. Freud. It's the 20th century. We're all attracted to both sexes. I promise I'll understand if you are attracted to a man.
Huh.
But I'll kill you if it's another woman.
I promise I'll understand if you get attracted to a woman as long as I can watch.
My God, I am now married to a playwright. You're my warrior, my suffragette.
You're lesbian?
Teach me. Take me. I want to taste you.
Amazing. Incredible. I get chills when I hear it. And your production is so lovely. I was fortunate enough to get to see it 2 weeks ago. Thank you for giving me the honor of sitting in the audience and watching y'all perform this amazing piece. So we're in our last weekend, right?
We are.
You are the ticket to get. People are talking about this show.
Mm-hmm. I'm talking about the show right now.
True. And you're a people. Tell folks where people can... tell folks where they can get more information about the show.
All information about the show is available on our website, austinplayhouse.com, you can, including all ticket links. We have the four remaining performances Thursday through Sunday. Sunday is at 2 o'clock, Thursday, Friday, Saturday at 8 o'clock.
Any possibility of an extension?
Unfortunately not. Okay. No added performances, no extensions. We are adding some seats, and we will have a waiting list at the door, and thus far have been able to get everybody on the waiting list in every night as well.
That's incredible. Great.
So if people want to see it, they have to see it this weekend. Mm-hmm. The ephemeral nature of this business.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Cool. Well, thank y'all so much.
Thank you very much for having us.
So that was Ben Wolf, Kathleen Fletcher, and AJ Klaus of Austin Playhouse's production of Indecent. For more information, it plays through this weekend. For more information, you may visit austinplayhouse.com. This is one of the fun songs from the show that I'm going to actually let y'all, one of you pronounce it because you probably can. Oh. Ben, pronounce that because y'all sing it.
It's one of our favorites. Vodkanyumach.
Vodkanyumach. Here, we'll be right back. Vodkanyumach, this is America. We are back. You are listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and
Nicole.
Anne gets her own microphone.
Anne gets
now.
Her own microphone now.
So we'll try to go as quickly as we can. I, of course, my computer turned off, which is where I keep all my notes now. I actually ran into Zell Miller III the other day, who was walked into my theater.
He's been on my mind, and he's got that new piece coming out.
He's got that new piece that I did not even know about.
Yeah, with Hyde Park, right?
Yep, and it's called Chronicles of an Indigenous... Oh my God! It's an indigenous something. I have to wait till
love me some Zell Miller III. He hasn't been on stage in a while.
He has not, and so it's going to be good to see him. And he's got a 3-week run basically at Hyde Park. And of course, now the mouth of my computer is disappeared, so I don't know how I can find it.
Would you like me to Google it?
But you can get information at HydeParkTheater.org would be a really good way to do it. But he's, as usual, I'm pretty sure it's a one-person show, a solo show. It plays from the 11th of this month, which is tomorrow. Through June 3rd.
So cool.
Yeah. So the other thing... My computer's frozen. No, it's okay. So the other thing I just want to talk about locally, very briefly, I'm going to say, a couple of minutes. I was at a event the other day that I was asked to talk to a group of philanthropists about the state of local Austin theater and philanthropy and how we are or we are not surviving after the pandemic. And joining me was Cookie Ruiz, who is the executive director of Austin Ballet, Ballet Austin, both of them actually. Mm-hmm. So it was very, very interesting.
How many people were in the room?
Not enough, if you ask me.
I like that answer, Lisa.
Yeah. So, but the state of funding is difficult because we talked about the city funding specifically, which is all based on the hotel occupancy tax, which means it's all based on tourism. So when they award these grants, everything you have to do has to have something that appeals to out-of-town content, which doesn't include everybody and all artists. So I think myself and other people would love to see other funding streams. But one of the things that Cookie brought up to the group, which I knew but I can keep forgetting, if an Austinite asks you how much of my taxpayer money is going to the arts, guess what the answer
is? It's a big zero.
It's zero.
Oh, I could tell you that. I get fired up about it all the time.
So the money that goes to arts organizations are not being funded by the taxpayers of the city of Austin. Mm-hmm. They're being funded by the guests that come here.
Mm-hmm. And the hotel tax that was part of the arts funding that helped with theater and that and fine arts and all that. Also, the pie had to get a little bigger because the musicians are now going to be getting a part of the hotel tax, whereas they had their own funds before, but now they're getting a piece of all the other fine arts fund. But
the other thing that I want to mention and talk about is just philanthropy has changed post-pandemic. Mm-hmm. People are not giving as much. I will step on my soapbox. This is something I say a lot. I mean, this is a nationwide problem in that people believe that it is okay that artists and arts organizations work at a wage that is below, well below the poverty rate. Because it is a romantic idea to starve for your craft. Therefore, let them starve. Let them eat cake. But it's frustrating to me because, you know, they say that artists will do this because they love the work they do. But I would argue that people that are in child welfare love that work and are equally as passionate about it.
Yeah.
But nobody would expect a social worker to work for $10,000 a year. Mm-hmm. But that's
Or free.
And there are theaters here in our city that do not pay their performers a penny. Mm-hmm. So as someone that hires performers and really would love to be able to pay them a living wage, I'm unable to because I can't, you know, we can't get enough philanthropic or grant money. So just the state of arts funding is really kind of in an emergency situation, and add that to inflation and the costs of production have gone way up. Mm-hmm. Those people that were paying their costs, their mortgage, their rent, well, forget it, they can't afford to live in the city of Austin. So there's just so much at stake. And you and I, Nicole, talk about this all the time. The value of arts goes beyond just entertainment.
Beyond entertainment. It teaches people problem solving, social skills, how to think outside of the box, talking to people that you would never talk to in the same socioeconomic worlds, race, gender. Like, you're looking beyond, I don't know, artivism.
Get artivism. Back into the artivism. I should say that we've been joined by Katie Folger.
We have been. She's been over here like,
I have not introduced Katie. We'll learn more about her later, but I wanted to make sure you were here and you're able to talk. I see you nodding with things that we're saying.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah.
It's tough, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, absolutely. I feel like in my immediate communities, I've been in Austin off and on for 13 years and
that's, you know, a lucky number.
It is. And I feel like I'm surrounded by incredibly gifted, brilliant, talented people that are struggling to pay their bills.
Yeah.
And if those people had enough money to merely support themselves, I mean, imagine how much more incredible work we would have coming out of this city. And unfortunately, mm-hmm. we're governed by a pretty regulated legislature around here. And I've been really disheartened at many moments throughout my time here, and how the arts are supported specifically. But I'm trying to be moderately optimistic in the sense that, okay, there's money streaming into Austin. Can we get these people with deep pockets to start supporting the artists that have made Austin, Austin? Like, and that's my big question.
Therein lies the problem.
That's it.
We have a city that markets this city.
They market.
Because the creative class is here.
Yeah,
of us. As Samsung, you want to bring your big factory here because look at our creative class. And then they don't do anything to support us.
Yeah.
And I should say, can I just say one thing?
Oh, yes, please.
Yeah,
please.
The opinions expressed on Offstage and on the air are not those of the staff or board of co-op. Yeah. They are merely our own simpleton opinions.
Yeah. I will note too that the project that I've been developing, I mean, it was fully funded by the community. Yeah. It's a Kickstarter backed project, and that's how I raise the money because that's where I have to get money to make my projects because there really aren't any other places to do it.
And what I find when we do these,
it's just a bummer.
Yeah, it is. But what I find when we do these Kickstarters, and you know, my theater's done several of them, is it's the same people. We're going to the same well. It's the same people that support us every time. But I want to touch those people that live out in West Austin that are all of our lovely, lovely, I love them, tech people that are streaming into the city by the thousands a year. And I would love them to say, God, not only is this a great town to see theater, not only, you know, I want them to also go, hey, let's go see a show. What do you want to see? I don't know. Let's pick up the Chronicle and find something and go to it.
Yes.
I want them to have the passion for the art that we do. And it's not only the theatrical arts. It's a lot of the arts organizations.
Yeah, it's everything from dance to theater to music to fine arts. It's the creative whole culture and world. But it's really funny because what entertained everybody during the pandemic when we were all trapped in our homes? All these creative people that yep. had absolutely no income because what they do exists in person. Mm-hmm. And that kinetic energy and touch in a room. And it kept everybody going and everybody going. And everybody was like, you saved my life. You helped me. But then there's no love or reciprocation.
I can't give you $5. And
yeah.
Right.
So yeah. It is a double-edged sword. Artivism. Artivism.
Artivism.
I'm hoping more artivism is going to come out of all this creative world, and some people are going to be like...
Yeah. I could talk about this forever.
Yeah, I know.
But we're going to jump right into Today in Theater History.
Today. Tell us about
it's Theater
it, Lisa.
History today.
Today.
All right, so in 2006, my favorite show, Tarzan, opened. I actually made fun of Tarzan, having never seen it. So it's
was a little delightful.
But
to be
as I was, you know, I'm an adjudicator for the high school awards, and we would see video. I never actually went to a Tarzan production, but that and The Hunchback of Notre Dame are both, I think, underrated as musicals.
Lisa, I agree with you on that one.
I got to see Tarzan in New York when I was like 16.
Oh. Did you enjoy it?
I did.
See?
Oh, no. Yeah, I was... No, 14. Yeah, it was fun. I had a great time.
That's cool. I was just seeing if I had... And I don't have them here. Also, the musical in 1978 opened Angel. And I picked up the Wikipedia.
Why do I know that? Who
I'm going to tell you. I'm going to tell you right now. Because I had to look it up, because that's the year I moved to New York, and so I didn't see it. So it's a musical play at the Minskoff. It opened on May 4th, 1978. It's based on the book Look Homeward, Angel.
Oh.
Songs and lyrics by Peter Udell, music by Gary Geld. These are the guys that did Shenandoah and Pearly. Uh-huh. It was directed by Philip Rose. It had Frances Sternhagen won a Tony for it. That had there were some other people.
Frances Sternhagen, really?
Yeah, I'm looking. There were some other people that Don Scardino was in it. So it ran,
this
I believe,
fascinating.
For four performances.
Oh, well, that might be why we didn't know. But I'm still. This is fascinating.
Yeah, the music was savaged by the critics. Oh, I know. I wanted to read part of the review because it was just so terribly mean.
Oh.
I can't find it.
No. That's okay. We don't need to read. We don't need to put the mean in the universe. Positive. It takes our loose.
I think you're right. Yeah. I was hoping that there was... Oh, I'm going to read it. It's Richard Etter of the New York Times said, Angel is a damp and oppressive amalgam of bathos.
Oh!
It has lyrics the consistency of cornbread soaked in milk.
Oh.
A whole collection of indifferent performances and a score of sufficiently banality to furnish a number or two for the piped music on airplanes waiting to take off.
Okay, that's just mean.
That's mean. And Richard Etter never, because he was the secondary critic in my first few years in New York, and he didn't usually write that mean.
Oh, well, wow. He did not like that show.
Okay, we got to keep going so we have enough time to talk to Katie. Otherwise, we're just going to hear our stuff, and then why is Katie
Come on,
here?
Guys. talk to me. I'm over here.
1994, I totally forgot about this. The sequel to Whorehouse, The Best Little Whorehouse Goes Public.
Oh, that's right.
Also didn't...
That didn't fare well.
And then birthdays, John Wilkes Booth.
Oh.
Other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how did you enjoy the play?
Now you have Happy birthday. Assassins in my head.
Arthur Kopic, born in 1937. Somebody named Fred Astaire.
Oh.
Katori Hall.
Oh.
And we're talking about writers. Susan Laurie Park's birthday also.
Susan.
And in 1922, Nancy
Tony
Walker.
Tony nominated Susan Laurie Parks because Top Dog Underdog's up.
So Nancy Walker, who everybody would recognize, maybe not know by name, but she was in a musical called Do Re Mi, music by Julie Stein, and lyrics by Betty Condon and Adolph Green, which I think you talked about last week.
Sound of Music? No.
No.
Oh, Do Re Mi. Do Re Mi. Yes. We did talk
about
Condon and Green last week.
Condon and Green.
We did, yes.
Do Re Mi was 1960 on Broadway. It was on the West End in 61, and it had a revival in 1999 as a concert starring Nathan Lane, Brian Stokes Mitchell, Heather Headley, lots of people.
Heather Headley.
The original had Phil Silvers and Nancy Walker, Nancy DeSalt, who's another character actor you would know from TV. Mm-hmm. So anyway, we're going to go away and listen to a little thing from Do Re Mi called Waiting, Waiting. And this is Nancy.
One of those people.
Yeah, one of those people.
Yeah.
No, this is Nancy Walker singing it. Here it is from Do Re Mi. We'll be right back. We are back. You are listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and Nicole.
Hello.
It's been really good, and it keeps getting better, this show.
I know.
I'm just saying.
I'm just saying, too.
I'm just saying. Anne, checking in with you.
Doing great. Learning so much.
Okay.
Oh, excellent.
There's going to be a test.
Okay, I'm ready.
Does it make you want to go to the theater?
It does, actually.
Excellent.
Lovely, excellent. Lovely. Theater's excellent. Fun. Well, let's switch gears and talk to Katie Folger, who's joined us here. And Katie Folger has opened a one-person show, a solo performance, as we call it. I love, love, love the title.
Thank you.
You know, if I don't even get to see it, I'm happy that I read the title.
Lisa, come on.
It's Getting in Bed with the Pizza Man.
That's right. Iambic pentameter, too. It's an accident.
Well, of course. Oh, is it?
Yeah. Getting in Bed with the Pizza Man. That was an accident.
That was the name of my third book, so it's good. this is great. And this is this your first foray into writing and performing for the stage?
Definitely not the first foray, but definitely the first, like, I would say fully funded, pro, we're doing this, we're doing a run, we're marketing it. I've been acting, I studied theater at UT Austin. And
what was the name of that school?
UT Austin. Okay. And then have mostly been on camera for the last decade. Uh-huh. But, you know, regarding writing, I've been developing comedic projects for a long time, mostly on camera, and then prose behind the scenes. And that this show actually came from a short story that I wrote a couple summers ago.
And you
ago.
Performed it, or you worked on it in a living room to
yeah,
begin with.
Yeah. I did a backyard performance. That was the first reading, just to see how it landed on the audience. And at the time I didn't even know it was a comedy, and people just laughed the whole time. And
oh,
I was like, sick. That's kind of what I would say known for as a performer, is like, I accidentally make things funny, I guess, because I don't know why. I guess it's the way I say things.
I do the same thing, but I just keep reminding myself that looks aren't everything.
Yeah, you know what? They aren't. They aren't.
So now you are working. The director is a little known person here in town called Matrix Kilgore.
Yeah, no, not a big deal at all around here.
Yeah, I love me some Matrix Kilgore. How did you hook up with Matrix?
So Matrix, fun story, has known me since I was 17.
Oh my!
He was my camp counselor at UT Theater Camp, but he kind of fell out of the sky. To be honest, it was like very kismet. He had heard that I was developing my show, and I was only meeting up with him for coffee a few months ago, just to kind of pick his brain and be like, Matrix, I've mostly been doing film for the last decade. I want to connect to the theater communities around here. What do I do? And he just goes, can I direct your show? And I was like, wait, what? I did not know. And he was like, I mean, I wasn't planning on saying that, but like, I just feel led to, and it was this sort of like, feeling the
organic
energy.
And
then
kismet.
Before we knew it, Matrix came on board, and he was the perfect person to fall out of the sky and do it.
Matrix is wonderful. I love to watch him work. He's very insightful on the words. So what we've neglected to tell our audience right now is, tell us, is it just about a delivery man coming and you're eating pepperoni pizza on stage?
That's it. Yeah. It's just basically, it's a purely immersive experience where we have a pizza man show up and you just watch me eat a box of pizza. No, it's the way I like to describe it is, it's a jump down a rabbit hole of beginner sexual empowerment. It's a racy and whimsical tale, a comedy about sex and singledom during the COVID-19 era. So yeah, it's I would say Nicole's seen it. It takes you on a journey that you don't quite expect, and we just got a really awesome review out of Broadway World today, which I'm really excited about. But
no, I didn't get to read it.
But
yet.
She talks a lot about in the review how, like, she kept being like talking about the substance of the show, and you know how, yes, it's flashy and sexy and fun, but if you pay a really close
it's raw
keen eye, you will take home something. So I'm really proud of that.
That's amazing
that she picked up on.
It made me think about a lot of things that I haven't thought about in life lately, from even about losing my virginity to talking about different people, just all these different moments in my life that I laughed at, or bad dates that you've laughed at. And I was giggling. I've been telling people, I'm like, watch out, Carrie Bradshaw. Here's Katie Folger. And that's my best way to describe it in a fun way like that.
So what made you, we talked about doing it on this little outdoor stage that you just did. Mm-hmm. When did you say, I want to write down some of my experiences?
So I've actually been doing that. I've been writing. I have stacks of writing from basically, I started writing pretty much, at least 4 or 5 times a week since I was 18. And just dabbling.
For 3 years?
3 years. No, okay. I'm 31.
13 years.
I've been, and I've always just been fascinated by documenting my life, mostly because growing up, I didn't see my experience or my friend's experience really represented in the literature that we were assigned to to read and consume in high school and whatnot. And I was really curious about just being honest and I've always loved reading and the written word. And so, it was almost like a boyhood thing where I was like, I'm just going to track things, my tales through the years. I have so many of them, and many of them are not good, because that's what writers do. We write a lot of not great stuff. And this one, just when it came out of me, I was like, there's something here. And I showed it to one of my best friends, Olivia Applegate, who also went to UT Theater, and she's a film actress that's killing it right now. And she is the first person that said, hey, I think this would be a really good one-woman show. And it was written in the first-person narrative. I was really gaining an affinity for memoir-style fiction, especially after reading these books, The Idiot and Either Or, by this really awesome Turkish author. And I wrote it, and it worked, and it vibed, and here we are.
Well, that's amazing. Unfortunately, we're kind of running out of time, but I just want to point to the idea of representation, how important that is. And I love how you said, I don't see myself anywhere. I'm just going to do it.
Yeah.
And I think that's so important. And thank you for doing that.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
That's important. Yeah. So you had your opening weekend at the Crash Box, which is a lovely little theater run by the Rude Mechanicals. Yeah. If you haven't been there, you're going to want to go.
It is really cool.
Yeah. I love that space. So you have you're playing through... When?
Saturday.
This coming Saturday.
Yeah. We have shows Thursday through Saturday. Our last show's at 10 p.m. on Saturday the 13th.
Where can folks go to get more information about this?
They can go to my website, katiefolger.com, and there you click the menu, and then it'll send
it's
you
right
to
there.
Tickets. Yeah.
I can attribute to it. And then Katie is an IE.
Yes, IE Folger, like the coffee.
Like the coffee.
And we're almost sold out. So, anyways,
okay, so then,
hop on it.
So, if people want to, they're going to want to probably go to that website pretty soon.
Exactly.
Katie, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for coming on, Katie.
Love to have you back.
Oh, yes, I'd love to come
indeed.
Back.
Wonderful. Well, that was Katie Folger and her one person show, Getting in Bed with the Pizza Man, plays at the Crash Box through the 13th. 13th seems to be the number we should play on the lottery. I'm just saying. And here is from National Lampoon's Lemmings. I thought you'd appreciate that. The song Pizza Man. We'll be right back. Okay, we just have time to close out. Anne, tell us your closing thoughts. I know. Run to a microphone.
I feel like I need to go see a show ASAP.
I really love it. Well, yeah. ATXTheater.com or org. Yeah, I don't know why I was having. Has all the shows listed all around. Now playing Austin.com and ATXTheater.org.
Okay. There are other articles, some great articles that I did not get to talk about. There's five things in the New York Times talking about the backstage goings-on of some of the Broadway shows, like what Jessica Chastain is thinking as she's revolving in a chair.
Going in circles, yes.
And then what I did not realize that Ben Platt stays on stage during intermission in his prison cell.
Yes, I didn't realize that until that.
And
either.
They talk about that, too. We have gone over time, so we have to clear the airwaves for... Austin Common Radio Hour, and that's it. So we're going to go away. We haven't heard anything. This is Schmigadoon. This is Good Enough to Eat. I think you'll recognize what it is a parody of. We'll see y'all next week when we look at what's happening off stage and on the air. Bye, everybody.
Ciao. Step right up, sir. Welcome to Blythe Butcher Shop. What can we get for you today?
Have you any ham?
Oh, cut if you have some.
How about veal?
Yes, thanks to Camille.
Kidney?